Hi, this is Jonathan Rand, author of Michigan Chillers and American Chillers, and you are listening to CattleCast.
Welcome to another episode of CattleCast, presented by Capital Area District Libraries. It's the podcast that provides a nice mix of information and entertainment. Here's your host, Mark Bazita.
Greetings. Today we'll talk with young actor and Flint native Kevlin B. Jones, currently starring in The Bodyguard at the Wharton Center. Financial planner Sarah Frank Hepfler will discuss the recent Equifax breach and how people can protect their credit files. Author and popular blogger Jen Mann joins us with her latest book, People I Want to Punch in the Throat. And Michigan and American Chillers author Jonathan Rand joins us. It's all coming up right here on CattleCast.
RB Digital is a service that allows you to download magazines like Highlights, 17, HGTV, and Forbes for free with a library card. Capital Area District Libraries. Everything right here.
You can now download CattleCast from iTunes and Google Play.
We're here today talking with Kevlin B. Jones, who plays Fletcher in The Bodyguard here at Wharton Center. And this young Flint native began his journey after being awarded the Best Overall Child Singer at the 2016 AMTC Shine Conference. Hi, Kevlin.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. So can I ask how old you are?
I'm 11 years old.
You're 11 years
yes.
old. Well, and you've been so passionate about acting since 3 years old?
Yes,
is that right?
3 years old, yeah.
What's your first memory of performing?
My first memory of performing was when I was at church. I did a duet with my sister, and that's basically where I was like, you know what, I think I want to sing. And I just started doing a lot more songs at church.
And this was at age 3?
Yes, age 3.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, and then so that just kind of developed your interest in singing and acting and all of that. What do you have a favorite between the two, singing and acting?
Definitely singing. Singing is my passion.
Okay. And so and the best part is in The Bodyguard, you get to do both of those things,
right? Yes, singing, dancing, acting, all of it.
So tell us, how did you actually get this role?
Well, I got the role from, I did a conference in Florida, and I sung, and there was an agent that contacted my mom and said that there's a part open for your son, and he can audition in New York. So we traveled to New York, and I took the audition. And while I was taking the audition for Lion King, we went back to the hotel, and I got the call, and that's where I was like, oh, my God, I'm ready.
It's really happening
now.
Yeah,
I'm so excited.
Oh, that's really neat. I mean, that's a true, great story for getting started. And so being in The Bodyguard, and I don't know if you saw the film before you got this role, but how does the film role differ from the play version? Do you know? Are there some differences there in that?
In the play role, he's more like, he definitely does sing more, but he likes to hang out with the dancers that his mom hangs out with, too.
Right.
And he's more, like, in the story, I can say.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So even though being 11 years old, you still have a long, long career ahead of you.
Yes.
Do you have a dream role? If somebody could come up to you and say, we're going to give you this part, whether it's singing, acting, etc. Do you have a long-term kind of, I would love to play a character or in a play or anything?
Since I've been on this tour, I haven't like really thought about that, but I would love to be on TV, most definitely.
Okay.
But I don't know.
I bet we'll see that someday.
Yeah, we definitely will.
So when you're out touring like this, what is your schedule? Like, do you have school, and how does all that fit into your everyday?
We have a tutor that travels with us, me and the other Fletcher. We have school 5 hours a day, and after that we go to the theater, and then we do that over the next day.
Okay.
And basically my teacher in Flint, she sends work to my tutor, and that's where I do the work. And then when I'm done with it, I send it back to the teacher in Flint. And that's where I'm just up to date with the class.
Right. Okay. And then you still do rehearsals and stuff at times during the day? Or once you're on tour, does that lessen?
Sometimes, usually like at my own time, I would go over songs, like do warm-ups, or just make sure I got the gist of it, just to make sure I'm ready for the show.
Okay. And you're still touring now, obviously, here in East Lansing at Wharton Center. Are you going to continue that tour as time goes on?
Well, it depends. Like, if I get older, they might have to let me go. And if I get another part, I would definitely just leave and do that and enjoy it.
Okay.
But it just depends what what happens, yeah. basically.
So tell us a little bit more about your role specifically in the bodyguard. Who is Fletcher?
Fletcher is a 10-year-old boy. He's smart. He likes cars. He likes to put himself out there with the dancers.
Yeah.
And he loves his mom. His mom is a celebrity. And sometimes she doesn't really have much time to hang with his son.
Right.
Hang with her son. And when the bodyguard comes, that's when he like realizes that he's gonna make a good friend. And he doesn't really have much friends because his mom is a celebrity and he doesn't really go out much. But he's basically just one of those kids that likes to hang out and play with cars. And he's a good kid.
Yeah. And I bet a lot of that relates to you, too.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, that's very cool. Well, I heard last night that you brought the house down with the song Dance With Somebody. And obviously lots of great music in the bodyguard.
Yes.
Could you give us, not the whole song, but maybe a 10-second version of that song?
Sure.
Okay.
Oh, I want to dance with somebody. I want to feel the heat with somebody. Yeah, I want to dance with somebody. With somebody who loves me.
That is awesome.
Thank you.
Well, you obviously have had a nice career already at 11 years old, and I can just imagine that we're going to see your name as the
yes.
years go by, whether it be singing, dancing, acting, all of that. And we really are proud of you, especially being from this area and, you know, in Flint
mm-hmm.
and Michigan and all of that. So congratulations on all of the success
you.
You've had so far and continued success in your future. We'll certainly be watching for you.
Mm-hmm.
Reminder that the Bodyguard is at Wharton Center now through October 22nd. And for ticket information, you can go to whartoncenter.com. Kevlin, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Imagine a place that lets you download a hot new bestseller. Stream your favorite TV series, listen to the latest music releases, even borrow a sewing machine or Wi-Fi hotspot. No, it's not an expensive subscription service or a giant online marketplace. It's your local library, and it's all free to cardholders. Capital Area District Libraries. Everything right here.
Right here is where I should be. And here is where I'm at.
Sarah Frank Kepfer is a certified financial planner and vice president at Financial Technology Incorporated right here in Lansing. She joins us today to discuss the recent Equifax data breach and how people can protect their credit files. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So for our audience, can you summarize what happened regarding the Equifax?
Sure.
Breach?
Well, Equifax, we should probably begin by saying, is a credit bureau. And what they do is they gather people's personal information and assign a number to you to talk about your credit worthiness. Okay. So we don't, as consumers, have any control over who gets those credit files. And that's kind of one of the big deals right now. Because May to July, the summer of 2017, they were repeatedly breached. And what happened was 143 million Americans had personal data stolen. This included dates of birth, social security numbers, sometimes driver's license numbers, and your credit history. So it might also include how many credit cards you hold, where they're at, how long you've held them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you figure 143 million Americans, that means most Americans who've had a job have been compromised.
Okay. Well, that was the next question is, yeah, I mean, how does someone know if their files were a part of that breach?
So if you want to check, there's actually a website, and it's www.EquifaxSecurity2017.com. So that's, again, EquifaxSecurity2017.com. And you go on there, and you plug in the last six digits of your social security number, and something else. It might have been your zip code, something like that.
Okay.
And then you're able to find out if you're on the list.
Okay. So by requesting fraud alerts through your credit card companies, will that completely safeguard you from thieves stealing your credit files?
Oh, that would be wonderful if it could actually work, but I'm afraid not. That's not quite all there is to it. So the credit bureaus are indeed offering some credit monitoring for a year, but I do suggest you file for that. You know, it's a free service. There was some talk that they were going to make you pay after a year, but as of now, they have rescinded on that because it wasn't really very good public relations. Mm-hmm. So there are a couple of easy steps that you can do. One would be get your annual credit report every year. So there is a site that is free and approved by the federal government. It's annualcreditreport.com. So you can go on there. Mm-hmm. And I would suggest that you just ask for one of your credit reports at a time. There are three different credit reporting agencies. And every quarter you can go on and ask for a different credit report and it will still be free.
Okay.
And you're going to want to go through that credit report and see if there's anything that you're not aware of. Did you actually ever have a Sears credit card? Maybe that wasn't you. Are there items that are showing up that maybe you paid late, but you don't ever remember being late on a payment? That's something you can dispute and have those corrected.
Mm-hmm.
So those are good things to do. Yeah. You want to look at all of your bank statements. You really want to review where your credit card is being used. And if you see that you live in Lansing, Michigan, and all of a sudden there's a charge for $300 at a tire shop in Oklahoma City, that might be a red flag. Mm-hmm. So you'd want to check that as well. Now, you also, to ensure that you keep a good credit history and credit number,
right,
would be to pay your bills in a timely manner. So paying bills on time, being less than 30 days overdue, is probably the single most important thing you can do to maintain a good credit score.
Okay, I didn't realize that. I mean, it's encouraging people to pay on time, but it also can help prevent
exactly.
some things.
Okay. Yes.
Good to yep. know. So in addition to the things that you've just described, are there other ways people can protect their credit files?
Yes. So you can do what's called credit freeze, and a credit freeze makes it more difficult for somebody to open new accounts.
Okay.
It would mean that you would have to actually call Experian or Equifax or one of the other credit reporting agencies before you could open a new line of credit. So if you wanted to buy the washer and dryer at Home Depot and you wanted to do the in-store financing, you would have to call the credit agencies and tell them that it is indeed you before they would release that. So that might slow down the process of buying a big ticket item.
Mm-hmm.
Another option would be what's called a fraud alert, which basically says that the credit companies have to text you if somebody is trying to open up something in your name, using your date of birth or your social security number to verify that it is indeed you.
Mm-hmm.
That is probably the better way to go than a credit freeze.
Okay.
Because it's a little bit more flexible, but the credit freeze, while it's kind of absolutely nobody can touch this, that only applies to new lines of credit. So if you have a credit card with Visa and you've got a $3,000 limit, somebody steals your identity, they could call Visa and request a $10,000 limit.
Okay.
And that would not be a frozen transaction. Mm-hmm. It could happen.
Okay. There's just, you know, so much information out there. What ways do you, how do people stay alert of these kinds of issues? And are there, you know, safe sites to check just to stay in touch with all of this, especially in a continuously evolving news story in a sense?
Yes, there was reports that Equifax has been hacked yet again. So I'm kind of watching the major news channels. So if you're seeing a lot from NBC, CBS, ABC, any of the other outlets that mm-hmm. there's been another breach, it's probably a good time to actually check.
Right.
The Federal Trade Commission, the FTC.gov, is the official website to go to if you want to know if there is a problem. Now, if you find out that your identity has been stolen, somebody's been taking out credit lines under your name and number, you want to go to a government website to report that, and that is identitytheft.gov. identitytheft.gov, which is where they will walk you through how to recover your identity. Another thing that you can do to make sure that you're not a victim of identity theft is to file your taxes early. Don't take an extension and don't wait. Filing taxes early makes sure that nobody else can try to claim your tax return.
A lot of information and somewhat scary times for a lot of people too, but at the same time, this is really important information for people to know and to be able to follow and monitor. So,
absolutely. So if you're not sure if you're on the list, it is www.equifaxsecurity2017.com. annualcreditreport.com is where you will get your free annual credit report. So again, that is annualcreditreport.com. And then finally, if you do find out there's been a problem, identitytheft.gov. Identitytheft.gov is the site to get help with that.
Sarah Frank Kepfer from Financial Technology Incorporated. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
You can now download Cattlecast from iTunes and Google Play.
When was the last time you used the library? Because the entertainment you love is ready to read, watch, stream, or download from movies to music to the latest bestsellers with no fees or nothing to return. Check it all out at cadl.org. Plus, download and enjoy magazines like ESPN, Golf Digest, and Men's Health on any mobile device for free. Just visit cadl.org. Capital Area District Libraries. Everything right here.
Sherry McConnell recently sat down with popular author and blogger Jen Mann.
I'm Sherry McConnell, Collection Development Specialist for the Capital Area District Library, and I'm here with Jen Mann. She is a blogger and an author, and she's here to talk about her new book, Working with People I Want to Punch in the Throat. How would you describe your book, Working with People I Want to Punch in the Throat?
Well, I would describe it as, I don't know, hilarious. It's a collection of true stories of horrible jobs that I have had in my life. I'm now a New York Times bestselling author, and it's the best job I've ever had. And so I decided to write a book about how I got here. And it's all my books are always collections of essays, of stories that are true stories, that are humorous, a little bit snarky, a little bit sweary, just a lot of fun.
How did you get started as a writer?
Well, I got started in 2011. I was a blogger at peopleiwantapunchinthethroat.com. I started a blog. I was a work-at-home mom. I was a realtor in those days, and I worked with my husband. And it was just the two of us working from home with two small kids, 4 and 6. And I needed some sort of outlet to sort of vent. And so my husband suggested I start a mommy blog, since all the moms had one. And I didn't know much about blogging. And when I looked online, it was a lot of rainbows and puppy dogs. And it was just very happy-go-lucky. And I thought, this is not true. This is not how it really is when you're home all day with a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. Like, my house is not spotless. And we're not just playing games and singing kumbaya all day. Like, what is going on? And so I decided to write a true story of what is happening with me. And so it became my creative outlet, as well as my sort of therapy session. Mm-hmm. I would just go on there and I would vent, and I started doing that in the spring. And then that winter, I went viral. I had a viral hit, and I managed to get 17,000 people to follow me on that first day when I had 1 million reads on one of my posts.
Wow.
And so after that, my husband was like, you need to start writing full time, you know, because I'd always wanted to be a writer. I'd wanted to be a writer since I was 5. And so suddenly this opportunity was there, but I was going to have to work really hard to make it happen. And so I started writing on the blog 5 days a week, and I started thinking about books that I could write. And so now I've got 3 People Want to Punch in the Throat books, and then 1 fiction book for YA, My Lame Life, and a bunch of other stuff I've been writing, and 600 blog posts. So,
wow. Nice.
I've been very busy. Yeah. I have carpal tunnel.
And you no longer work as a realtor.
You know what? I am still licensed. Okay. My license will expire later this month. And probably tonight I will go back to my hotel and do my online continuing ed classes to keep my license active. I do like to keep it active. I'm afraid that maybe tomorrow people will stop buying my books. So,
yeah, it doesn't look like
and
it.
I'll have to go back to selling houses. Plus, my husband still sells real estate. And this way, if he needs my help, I can pitch in. I'm still licensed and I can pitch in and help him and help him out if he needs help.
What message would you like to send to the world with your books and your blog?
I think for me, the message has always been, you're not alone. Like I said before, when I first started looking at the other mom bloggers that were out there, I felt like they were not telling us the truth. I felt like, you're not showing me your messy corners. You're not showing me the cobwebs. You're not showing me, you're not airing your dirty laundry, you know? And it kind of made me feel like maybe I wasn't doing something right. And maybe I wasn't a good mom if my kids made a mess when we were making cookies and I didn't enjoy making cookies with them, you know? And so I started writing these things, and I started hearing from other women saying, oh my gosh, thank you. Thank you for telling it like it really is. And I think that has always been it, you know, to find your tribe online, to find your people. It's not my neighbors. My neighbors are not my friends. And they know why. But I just, I want to make sure that people know that it's okay to, you know, it's okay not to want to spend every waking moment, to not think that it's, you know, hashtag blessed, that our lives are so perfect. My life is great. It is. But there are days that really suck. And I'm happy to tell you about those days and let you know that we can have sucky days too.
So true. Who has been the biggest influence on your writing?
Well, I think the biggest influence, I think when I think of like who my muses are or whatever, it's my family. It's my kids and my husband. I write about them. I write about myself a lot and I write about them a lot. They're the only three people I really care about too, like what they think. That's a question I get asked a lot is, you know, what do your neighbors think? What do your family think? Mm-hmm. I don't care what they think. But those three, I do care. And if they give me so much fodder to write about. And if they are cool with it, then I write about it. If they're not, then I don't. But as far as sort of like a career trajectory, I've always looked at Jen Lancaster as somebody. I picked up Bitter as a New Black several years ago and read that book and just laughed my butt off. I'm being kind. I'm keeping it PG. Ooh, that was close. Laughed my butt off. And I thought, wait a minute, you can write a whole book about just silly stuff that's happened to you and just make people laugh? Like, I want to do that. And so now she has, what, I don't even know, maybe 10 memoirs or something like that. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I want to do. So I've sort of mapped her career and I'm like, well, shoot, I want that too.
How is writing books different than writing your blog?
Well, I think with the books, and the blog both, like, yeah, it is different. And I have to think about sort of, is this a book-worthy story or is it a blog-worthy story? Mm-hmm. I do write a lot of topical things on the blog. I'm always being sent whatever is kind of weird thing is going viral. Like this summer, it was like that hairy swimsuit thing that was going viral. I don't like pumpkin spice. And so, you know, and so like last week, I think it was a school in Baltimore that they called the hazmat team because there was a pumpkin spice air freshener, but they thought they were being poisoned, you know. And so people are always sort of sending me these really weird, obscure news stories. And so those are blog worthy. Those mm-hmm. I will talk about on the blog or I'll talk about on social media. I mean, I now have like a million followers on social media. So I kind of mini blog on Facebook and stuff and sort of talk about topical things. And then when it's a story that can fit into a theme, either with, I have a book about suburbia, I have a book about the holidays, and now I have one about working. So if it's something that can sort of fit into a, I can see a whole story, a whole book mm-hmm. of stories like this, mm-hmm. then it can go into the book. And so I sort of save them and piece them out, or if it's a longer piece, I've always been a really long-winded blogger and talker, as you can tell. I've always been a really long-winded blogger, and so it's not so much like, is it too short or too long? It's more, if it's an evergreen story, it can go into a book. If it's more topical, then it needs to go onto the blog.
Well, thank you so much. Good luck on the rest of your tour, and thanks for visiting Cattle.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We're here today with author Jonathan Rand of the Michigan Chillers and American Chiller series, among other titles. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here. So how did you get started as a writer?
The easiest way to explain it was kind of an accident, I think, with a lot of authors. I got a job right out of college at a radio station, and it was this part-time gig, and it was just minimum wage, but one of the duties that I had was writing and narrating and producing radio commercials. And
sure.
I fell in love with it. Because I would make stories out of these radio commercials. I didn't want to do these boring,
right.
You know, just voiceovers. And I made these stories and, you know, maybe it was just for my own entertainment purposes. And I would do things, you know, like a Bigfoot creature going into a bank to open a checking account or, you know, anything, just
right,
goofy
right.
stuff. And it probably was another 10 or 12 years later, but meanwhile, I had always been a voracious reader. I've always been just a big fan of books, and I was always reading. And I would keep getting ideas for stories, and I was always thinking, you know, somebody ought to write a story about that. Or, oh, here's mm-hmm. another idea. Somebody should write a story about it. And finally, one day, I thought, well, maybe that should be me. You know, maybe I should do that. And,
right.
And so I just kind of took off, and the whole that was it. I mean, everything kind of took off in that direction for me.
Yeah. No, that's great. Yeah. Well, and you've got that radio voice. I can hear it.
Thank you very much. I don't talk like that on the radio, and I never did, but I used to hear those voices, and I would mimic them, and I have a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. That, so, no, yeah. absolutely. Yeah. Even doing that for a few years and, you know, growing up reading and all of that kind yeah. of stuff, what would be something you would want to tell your younger self now that you know what you know today?
Boy, that's a good question. I guess I would probably say don't take things so serious. You know,
mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. you look back on all the things that that bothered you at the time, you know, as a kid growing up through middle school and junior high and high school, and you know, the end of the world as we knew it was,
right,
you know, on this biology exam or something. It'd probably be my key piece of advice to my younger self.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the series that you're most known for, both the Michigan Chillers and the American Chillers series. How did that get started?
I had started writing. I wrote some adult fiction, and I did that. That was first. And I'd written a couple of books, and they were, you know, they did okay regionally.
Mm-hmm.
But during the process of writing a book called Ferocity, which is about a giant muskellunge that eats people in a freshwater lake, you know, uh-huh, right out of the 50s,
right.
50s horror
right,
story,
right.
You know, I came up with this idea for the Michigan Chillers, and it wouldn't leave me. I can just kind of create stories and base them in the cities. And I remembered reading a lot of the stories I had read, you know, growing up, you know, the Alfred Hitchcock mysteries,
sure,
you know, the Three Investigators and Hardy Boys. And I was always digging up ghost stories and things. And I thought,
right,
I could have these kids and, you know, they could, every, you know, kids would be different in each story from every different city. And then I thought, you know, before I even started writing the Michigan Chillers, I thought that if it, you know, and then it kids takes off, I can do different states and
right,
maybe I'll get to travel. And
yeah,
so it was all this pipe dream that just kind of came true with a lot of late nights, a lot of writing, and a lot of effort.
Right. Yeah. And do you encounter people from the various cities and places that you've written about, and they say, "Oh, you know, like that's my hometown."
I do. It's kind of cool. And then, I will, you know, like in the first six books in the Michigan Chillers series, you'll notice that most of them take places. Well, they do. They all take place in northern Lower Peninsula.
Right.
And those are places I was very familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I write the stories, I really don't create them to be a history lesson or a, you know, and really not a geography lesson, but I do put a lot of geographical and facts. So
mm-hmm,
if somebody is reading the story from Gaylord, you know, they'll go, "Oh yeah, I know where that street is. Oh, I know where that intersection or that lake or something."
Right.
So it's a little more familiar for those
yeah,
people.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, and now that you've done so many of both of those series in particular, do you have a favorite between the two?
Yeah, or? That is a tough question, because each one I think is, I like for different reasons. But some of the ones, I think I had a lot of fun with Dinosaurs Destroy Detroit, because I just love dinosaurs,
right,
you know,
right,
growing up. And there's actually three dinosaur books. There's another one in the American Chillers, Wicked Velociraptors mm-hmm, of West Virginia, and Savage Dinosaurs of South Dakota. So those are kind of my favorites. And then A Catastrophe in Caseville is about a giant cheeseburger that attacks the town in Caseville,
right,
inspired
right,
by their, you know, wildly popular and successful, you know, cheeseburger festival.
Yes,
yeah,
right,
so,
right.
So those are some of my favorites. So,
yeah. Well, and are there places even just within Michigan that you haven't had a chance to write about yet that you would still like to pursue in the future?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And that's what a lot of people do ask me. Now that you're writing the American Chillers, are you done with the Michigan Chillers
mm-hmm,
series? And the answer is no. I had anticipated, I kind of put the series on hold after I did 10, and
mm-hmm,
I kind of got the American Chillers going. And then I got to 15, and I thought, okay, I'm going to kind of wrap the series up and focus on the American Chillers. But I couldn't do it. I just
right,
found, because I would, you know, I travel around Michigan a lot, and I would get different ideas, and I'm like, okay, well, I have to do this. You know, this is about our state. And so
right,
I don't think I'm going to ever stop doing the Michigan Chillers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's great. Well, and so, you know, you speak with certainly a lot of kids, and I mean, in schools and
yeah,
library presentations like the one you're doing with us here at Cattle. What kinds of questions do the kids ask you, you know, when they
yeah,
come out to see you, whether it's in school or, you know, is it, you know, how to be a better writer or,
yeah,
you know, that kind of thing?
I think the question that I get, and I think most authors get, is the most popular question I hear is, where do you get your ideas?
Mm-hmm.
Kids ask, where do you get your ideas? And that's a good question, and I really wish I had a solid answer. And the only thing I can say is that when I speak with adults about this, especially, and I try to, and I will explain it for kids, but I really can trace every single idea back to my childhood. You know,
mm-hmm,
I had a really, you know, my parents let me just go off into the woods and be alone, and I was a creative problem solver. I
right,
would sit down and read for hours and hours and hours, and so I was very comfortable, you know, with myself, and I was always reading a lot. And that's one of the things that I do tell kids, is that if you're looking for ideas, you know, go out and read. You know, it doesn't
mm-hmm,
matter what you read. You know, you don't have to read Michigan Chillers or American Chillers. Pick up, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find that you'll get, it will, it, you can't help but get ideas. And that's one of my problems, is that I do sometimes have a hard time reading, not staying focused for lack of attention on the story, but I'll get an idea for another story, completely different. I might be reading Harry Potter, and I'll get an idea for a book about a werewolf or something.
Right.
I have no idea how that happens, but it does.
But it's out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. Yeah. Where can people get more information about you and the and your books?
But, probably the easiest place is just the website AmericanChillers.com. That's got lots of information about, you know, I've got a store up north, and of course we do all of our shipping there. Everything goes from around the to around the country from there, and draws a lot of people in the summer, and we're open year round there. But AmericanChillers.com is the website for more information and anything.
Sounds good. Continued success with everything you do, and thanks for joining us today on the Cattlecast.
Thank you.
Metallica live this weekend, live Saturday at Capital Area District Libraries. It's Jonathan Brand.
You know, yes. You know, something like that. Absolutely. Just a little out of the norm.
Right. That's great. Until next time, I'm Mark Bazita. Thanks for listening.